Yeah, it's all about car repairs right now.
What a bitch. I hate cars.
I really, you know, the two tires that I had to buy, I hate buying tires. I cannot stand buying tires. So they just nickel and dime you and rip you off every way they can.
That's my my wife. I don't know, man. It's not that I don't trust her, but like whenever we got our dog, we got a Doberman, right? We bought her from a breeder. And the reason we bought a dog from a breeder instead of from a rescue was because my wife is deathly allergic to dogs. So we had to find a breed that was generally good for allergies, and Dobermans are one. And the breed also had some things that we wanted in a dog, like short hair, well-behaved, you know, yada, yada, yada.
When my dad was alive, he bred Dobermans, so I grew up with him all the time.
So we get our dog, we bring her home, and there are a couple of small issues. Like, she had a little ringworm on the tip of her tail, and her dew claws were not properly removed. So we could tell, but is what it is.
Right.
Meg takes her over to PetSmart, and so I'm at work or whatever, and she calls me, and she's like, it's going to cost like $1,000. They say the dog is full of worms. She's got all kinds of health issues, all this, all that, and blah, blah, blah. So he's like, take your dog home. Take her home. We're going to go to a different vet. So we go. Luckily, it was just right around the corner from our house, but there's the Britmore Animal Hospital just right around the corner. And I looked them up online, and it's like, oh, they specialize in Dobermans and that type of breed, like those, you know, Dobermans and Bulldogs and kind of more high-maintenance animals. Take her in there. Immediately, they're like, oh, well, here's a little topical cream for her tail, and we'll eventually have to get to those dew claws, but they're not going to cause any pain. We'll do that later when she's bigger. Otherwise, excellent specimen, clean bill of health, you know, $25. Thank you.
You were about to shell out a ton of money to the other one.
Uh-huh. And I was like, I don't know if it's just because you took her in there and they were like, ah, you know, there's a mark, you know, or because, you know, because you're a girl or whatever. But like, man, like, took the car in, needed an oil change, our Pathfinder needed an oil change. And then so we get a phone call. We're on, you know, going down the road, and it's like, oh, you need brakes, and you need this, and you need that, and you need this other thing. And like $700 later, it was just like, for an oil change. Dude, so I don't know, man. I hate cars.
I know. It's just a pain.
I mean, I like riding in cars, and I like looking at cars. And when we go to the auto show, I think those are neat.
But having to deal with them.
It's just, man, I've had to change alternator on the side of the road, tires. You know, I've changed out most of the inside of a car on several cars, brakes and bleeding fluid. God, I hate it.
I like working on cars, actually.
I like working on cars.
If I would
like working on cars if I had an old POS car and I needed to restore it, and I was going to go out, and today I'm going to get my wrench and my new parts out of the box, and I'm going to take these rusty old parts off and put new ones on, and it's going to be an improved piece. I don't want to take a car I'm currently driving that's not having any issues and pay a whole lot of money to keep it that way.
Right.
That sucks.
Yes, it does. But you know, I just bought that van. It's a beater when I first got out of the oil field. And it's time to go to something new, I think. I need to start looking at something else. But I like the van because when I do shows, I don't have to rent a U-Haul. I can fit a lot of comic books in that thing. And then I'm starting to wonder if that's why I'm having tire problems and stuff. Because I put a lot of comic books in there. And that's heavy, dude.
Go buy an old hearse.
Well, a friend of mine talked to me about that. He bought one, so.
A hearse?
Yep.
Yeah, you get a nice used hearse, man. You get like a custom Cadillac that's had its entire rear end completely reinforced, heavily reinforced to carry coffins and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can usually get them with, like, you know, very, very low mileage for few thousand bucks.
Right. Yeah, I knew a guy that owned the local.
And if you're hosting the Scary Dad podcast,
it'd be a perfect vehicle.
That'd be a perfect vehicle to drive around.
He owned the pumpkin patches back in my hometown, and he rode around in a hearse all the time. All year long, man.
Well, speaking of hearses, let's talk about the step before. Everybody, welcome to episode 28.
Hello.
It is April 24th, 2017. And we were, if you listened to the last episode, episode 27, we decided at the end of episode 27 that our next episode was going to be about torture. But it's been a little bit preempted by an unfortunate event that happened in the last week. So, Scott, you want to tell them what the subject of today's episode is?
Sure. We're going to... about 12 years ago, I was diagnosed with something called Crohn's disease, and I've spent a lot of time in hospitals. And I recently had to go do a four-day stint in one. And, you know, I was by myself the whole 4 days at night, and, you know, just... It gets creepy in hospitals. So me and Billy were thinking, hey, let's do a episode about the creepy, dark side of asylums and hospitals in America.
Episode 28, we're talking about the haunted hospital. Join us as we talk about a little bit of everything hospital related. First, we're going to get into our history segment. It's not too traditionally, it's not too terribly long. I don't know why. Oh, I was looking at this word here. It's not very long, so we'll just knock it out real quick. 1184 BC, on this date, is the traditional date of the fall of Troy. So, I think by now they've put together that it existed, maybe not as the poems say, but they know where it was,
and right,
that something tremendous happened there. So, today is the day that it came down, that Trojan horse. Fast forward a good long time. 1967, cosmonaut Vladimir Komarov dies in the Soyuz 1 when its parachute fails to open. He's the first human to die during a space mission.
Was it a splashdown or was it on land impact?
I think it was coming down, okay, and the parachute just didn't open, so he ended up just crashing to the ground.
Wow.
Notable births. This is truly horrifying. It had to have been a dark day. This date in 1942, Satan unleashed Barbara Streisand.
God.
Horrible, horrible, horrible.
She pops up every once in a while just to annoy you.
My dad used to tell me the story of, like, when I was a baby laying in my crib. They wanted to put on some soothing music, so they threw on Barbara Streisand, and I just screamed through it.
I wouldn't imagine not. So.
And then he was like, but we put on Neil Diamond, and you fell right to sleep. You were totally happy with that. I was like, Neil Diamond's cool. How'd you see Neil Diamond?
It was funny. I collect vinyl and everything, and I come across Barbara Streisand records often. Apparently, she was considered a sex symbol back in the day, which I still don't see.
I don't understand that at all. Not at all.
She was definitely marketed that way, that's for sure.
Yeah, my wife, one time I came home from band practice or something. She was watching some movie with her and Robert Redford. And she's like, it's a pretty good movie. I was like, it's the least believable movie. Like, no way a dude like him would go for a girl like her. Like, at all. She's not cute. She's got an annoying sounding voice. And all she's doing is bitching the whole time. Let's watch something else.
And honestly, I think just because I put it out of my mind, I know I've seen her movies before, but I can't remember a single part that she's been in, or just, you know, just
it's because
remember
brain,
any lines or anything.
It's because the mind is repelled.
Because I remember Yentl when I was young.
But the mind is nearly repelled. You'll have some horrible dream one time and wake up in a cold sweat and be like, what the hell is that?
I did like South Park's rendition over as Mecha Streisand.
Uh-huh.
First season.
Robert Smith.
Robert Smith.
The Disintegration's the best album ever. 1982, not quite as bad, but not good. American Idol winner Kelly Clarkson. I was kind of scraping the barrel. Most of the people were like Austrian physicists, and I couldn't figure out why they were important other than the fact that they died on this day. Or were born. 1731, Daniel Defoe, writer of Robinson Crusoe. And 1974, we lost Bud Abbott, the other half of Abbott and Costello.
Classic comedy, man. Who's on First still makes me laugh every time I hear it.
So, I think a short history segment is going to be all right. I think this is going to be kind of a long episode. So, because just in my brief note-taking research, I filled a page and part of another page, and then you've got a stack of pages. So,
well, the thing about it, like I was saying earlier, with these places were set up like their own cities. There were these huge compounds, and we're talking about a time. A lot of the ones I looked at, when the most atrocities were going on, society shunned its undesirables. Mm-hmm. You know, they had no problem sticking somebody in the crazy house. You know, I mean, there's a running joke when I was a kid that, you know, they were going to take us to Pineville was the name of the asylum. Take us to Pineville so they can get a 50-pound bag of rice, because they used to give you rations when you bring people over. You know, they're like recruiting those undesirables. So people had no problem sticking folks in there.
Terrible, terrible. I unfortunately have seen my share, more than my share, of the inside of a hospital, and somewhat recently, actually. In 2014, in September of 2014, my dad took ill and ended up spending the last month of his life pretty much in the ICU unit at Memorial City. And he went... I mean, this was not scary hospital, this was prime care or whatever, but... You know, he had ups and downs and periods of recovery followed by periods of setback and mm-hmm. stuff. And, but the ICU doesn't really have traditional what you'd call visiting hours.
Right.
You can kind of come and go as you please. Yep. And, you know, obviously if you're not being loud or obnoxious or whatever, they leave you alone. So, spent a lot of time in there. So, recently, you know, like, I guess it had been out for a while, but it had been syndication, so it was just on the TV in there. So anyway, I come into the hospital. I'm hanging out in the hospital just on a day, one day at lunch break. My dad's like, "So, have you seen this show where there's all these dead people in the hospital?" And I was like, he's like the dead are up and walking, like they're zombies, and they're in the hospital. And I was like, The Walking Dead? He's like, "Does that take place in a hospital?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "That's probably it." I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "That's not a show you want to watch whenever you're stuck in a hospital alone at night."
Yeah. It's like, don't you sleep very well.
He's like, you start looking around and start wondering when they're going to rise.
Right.
And he was talking about The Walking Dead, which, you know, makes its debut. The main character wakes up in a hospital that's been destroyed. And he managed, you know, he was locked in a room, so he didn't get caught up in it. But as he's walking through, it's deserted, it's empty, there's bullet holes all in the walls, and, you know, obviously a path of destruction has come through this empty hospital.
Right.
And that sets off that show that's just finished its seventh season at this point. And two of the scarier episodes happen in the hospital. One's the first episode when he's trying to get out, and the second one is the flashback to when everything's happening, mm-hmm. when everything's going down in the hospital. And there's just something about an empty hospital that's even scarier.
What I was going to say is, when I think of scary, the thing about hospital that scares me, or what, you know, I envision, is that scene from Rob Zombie's Halloween remake, whenever he gets out of his room and kills everybody on staff. There's mm-hmm. nobody in the hallways, people just walking around, you can slip in and out of rooms easy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a prime example.
Yeah. And There's a lot about it. It's just, it's a wide open public space with very little security, like you say. You can just move around as you please. There's not a, you know, like I said, in the ICU, there wasn't a whole lot of, there was nobody. You know,
right.
You just kind of come and go as you please. The nurses will just be like, "Hey, where you at? You know, where are you headed?" But if you had ill will, you know, like, there's not a whole lot they could do.
Well, last week when I was in there one night, yeah, I couldn't sleep. I was bored. It was 12:30 at night. I roamed the entire hospital. I went every floor. I went downstairs. I went all the way by the cafeteria. Went by the emergency room. Saw one cop. He asked me how I was doing. I had my IV bag and everything, just walking around the hospital.
You could have been a zombie. They didn't even shoot you. So there's been quite a bit of fiction about, you know, hospitals, things set in hospitals, mm-hmm. because it's scary. And so we'll get into that in a minute, you know, but, like, why a hospital is scary, I think, kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of...
death.
There's a lot of misery and death. A lot of people go there and they never get out. And you think of it as a place of healing, but it's, in a lot of cases, it's the destination for people who aren't going to be able to heal.
Right.
And, you know, if you believe that places get charged with an energy, you know, when you start feeling better, they kick your ass out. So there's not a, like, except for maybe the maternity ward, there's not a whole lot of, like, wonderful, boy, I sure am glad I'm here feelings, even for people that are there for minor reasons.
Right.
You know, so it gets charged up with negative energies, and then turn off the lights.
I'll give you some negative energy right here. The longest hospital stay I ever had was 10 days. And I had a resection done where they actually cut out 2 feet of my intestines, my ileum, and they had to remove it. And when they do this surgery, the way they do it is they put you on a table, and there's an empty table next to you. And they pull out your entire digestive tract, and they stretch it out on this table. And they go through, and they find the parts they need to remove, sew everything back up. And then they just shove it back in you and sew you up. And as they say, the body puts everything back in place where it's supposed to be. Well, I had a friend of mine had the surgery before, so I had to run down on exactly what to expect. That night, the nurse, somebody walks in the room with a plate of food for me to eat. And I said, are you sure about this? Because I just had, you know, my intestines on a table. I don't know if I should be eating right now. They're like, yeah, the doctor wants you to go ahead and try to eat. And what it was, you know, when they charge for a procedure, that's how much they're going to charge. No matter how long you stay, it's charged for a procedure with insurance companies. So they were trying to get me out. And mm-hmm. It got to the next day, I was distended. I couldn't get any nurse to come in and help me. Threw up all over myself. Walked to the nurse's station, just covered, saying, hey, would you guys come now? And by the time I was getting out, I was cursing everybody out, and everybody hated me.
I can imagine.
Lots of negative energy in that hospital.
No kidding.
Yeah, 10 days, my longest stay.
Mm. Well, then there's also been a lot of bad stuff. I mean, it wasn't until the 20th century, really, that doctors were considered even really kind of a good thing. Maybe latter half of the 19th, but certainly the 20th. Before that, you know, your old Doc Sawbones just soon cut off your leg as look at you. And to go to the doctor was to risk infection and disease in a lot of cases that...
Yeah.
You know, that they couldn't really do anything about because they didn't understand antiseptic and cleanliness and germs. So, you know, to where it's like, I believe that if you go, like, it's the barber that used to do
bloodlettings.
They did bloodlettings, and they did in a lot of cases surgery and stitches, and you know, you're going to survive going to a doc to a barber because they kept their tools and like little antiseptic stuff.
Right. Little hairs all over the place.
Yeah, little hairs all over the place. So you can go in for a shave and then get, you know, get your warts removed and stuff.
Saw a place in Rosenberg does old fashioned shaves. I think about going to get one. I haven't had one in a long time.
Mine does. Over by Memorial City Mall. It's good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And if he cuts you, you're right now to the hospital.
Yeah, these places were just, you know, they, in talking about the aspect of at night, nobody's around. That's prime ground for a predator to go and try to get a job and seek a career. Somebody that wants to commit crimes and do bad, they're going to try to go to the easiest place there is to do it.
Well, I have a list of movies that we can get to in a little bit, but what was more fascinating was the nonfiction stuff. So, we did our serial killer episode. Google serial angels of death or serial killing nurses. And you'll find multiple lists of lots and lots of people worldwide who, for out of quote unquote mercy or just for pleasure, have killed people by lethal injection just in their hospital beds. I grabbed just a list of like 5 of the worst ones. I looked at like 5 or 6 different websites, and all of these landed on the same lists. But you've got the Lane's Angels of Death. There were 4 nurses in Vienna that admitted to killing 48 people, but police believe is possibly over 200. Just wow. four of them. And a lot of them start off as mercy. Like somebody's in a lot of pain and they just can't handle it, and so the nurse will quietly slip them a lethal dose of whatever medicine they're taking just to kind of let them. But once they get away with it a couple of times,
it gets easy.
It gets easy, and then they start taking out just problem
patients.
Probably
justifying it, you know?
Problem patients and people that are just annoying or whatever. And so you had, like, Kristen Gilbert. She was a VA nurse. She killed four with epinephrine, which is a heart regulation mm-hmm. drug. And apparently she was planning on killing quite a few more before she got caught. But that's a VA hospital. She would do it, like, in broad daylight.
Man.
Charles Cullen, which we talked about in the serial killer episode.
That's Chicago, right?
He was found guilty of 29 murders. He claimed 40, and he did it with dioxin. Again, a lethal injection drug. There was Efren Saldivar, who claimed over 200.
Wow.
And just recently, within the last year, Daniela Pozzioli, she was a Italian nurse. And this bitch, dude, she took selfies with herself with dead patients, like making fun of them, like funny faces with dead patients. And she killed equivalently 90 of them. And this is just... These are your nurses. These are the people you're supposedly... I mean, your life is in their hands. You don't know what they're putting
in that... You have to be trusting.
You know, what they're putting in that drip.
You know, people always say trust is something that you earn. Actually, a lot of times, trust is given. When I get in a taxi cab or Uber, that dude has done jack shit to earn my trust.
Except for the fact that he happens to be alive right now.
Right. You know, and you put this trust in these people that you don't know. And you feel comfortable with it.
Airline pilot?
Yeah. Reminded me of a bit I heard about the airline fire. So I'll tell you later.
So do a search for scary hospital movies or whatever. There's a list of books. There's a list of movies. Like I said, we've already mentioned The Walking Dead. There's an entire season of American Horror Story. It's the only season I've actually watched of American Horror Story, which is season 2, which is The Asylum, which kind of fell apart in the end, but it's got its moments. But same thing, weird experiments, sadistic nurse, nun nurses, and you know, people who are not crazy, who are committed and drugged up and not allowed to leave, and all kinds of crazy stuff.
And because of the way these places ran, like, you know, being their own facilities, and there's one that I have in here that we're going to talk about, that they had their own railway station. All the railroads detoured onto their grounds. They had their own police force. The police didn't even go there. They had their own security system team. And I want to say it was like 10,000 patients, man. You're going to have some bad stuff. And the thing about it is there's so much demand for committing people. Most of these places were 3, 4, 5 times over capacity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just, it was insane the way it was run. There's no regulation. Nobody gave a shit.
Well, I've read quite a bit where it's not, it wasn't even necessarily like the, it's not as if they started with ill will. Like, in a lot of cases, they started off trying to be a state-of-the-art facility.
But it got out of hand.
But it got out of hand, or they had an influx of patients that just completely, and a lot of it came with state subsidies and stuff like that, because they didn't understand mental health. So, I mean, For a long time, they thought, like, PMS was hysteria.
Right.
You know, it's just something that happens. And you imagine, you know, you got different parts. Again, I think some timelines are screwed up. Like, you look, so for example, like the Civil War, the American Civil War ended in 1865. A lot of these mental health facilities were put up in the late 1800s, mm-hmm. 1870, 80, 90. So, in the Civil War, they discovered and started using heroin, like, as battlefield medicine. And whenever they really started using cocaine, it was considered a miracle drug, because it would take all of these guys who were junkies and wake them up and make them move around and act normal. But in reality, all they were doing was being now addicted to two different things instead of just one. And then whenever they weren't acting right, you could take them down to the ye old asylum, toss them in, throw away the key, and then you don't have to worry about them anymore.
Just undesirables.
Undesirables.
And the thing, it went beyond that.
Veterans.
Too. Well, like this immigrants. Hospital, immigrants, criminals, orphans. You know, any undesirables in our society, they would just shut them off into these facilities mm-hmm. and forget about them. You know, it's sad thing. And you can imagine just all the negative energy, like you were saying, that occurred in these places. Mm-hmm. All the deaths that you don't know about, man. It's. I want to visit one very badly. I want to go to one of these old hospitals. Yeah.
Yeah. There was, because, I mean, the guy who invented the lobotomy.
Yeah, that was it.
He would go on tour and go places and just do lobotomies. It's like, oh, let's give me five of your best men. Let's go ahead and stick an ice pick through their brain. And just, like, this is how it's done. Pop, pop. And just move along.
And it was so simple for those people. It's... And when you know, we see atrocities occurring in the medical field today. There was that doctor in, was it Philadelphia? They got arrested about 3 years ago, the abortion clinic, where he was keeping fetuses and stuff in mm-hmm. there and everything. It's just sick. You know, and these atrocities are much worse. And it just occurred so often. I mean, I got three lists right here of the so-called, they're the top ones. There's not a repeat. There's not a single hospital repeated on one of the lists. There's that many that you can talk about.
Incredible.
And I'm sure it was big business too, because you got government subsidies for this stuff, taking care of the undesirables and everything. Mm-hmm. So the more you have, the more money you make. So just cram them in. And
I think the bubble broke in the late 80s whenever
people started doing TV exposés. Television is what really brought it down.
Mm-hmm.
People started realizing what was happening.
A lot of the government funding got lost too.
Yeah.
I think Ronald Reagan, for better or for worse, love him or hate him or whatever, They reformed that whole, like, you couldn't just toss your drunk brother-in-law into the asylum and have him be taken care of the rest of his life and have the government pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there had to be a legitimate issue, and it had to have, like, science behind it. So a lot of these people who had been stuck in the asylum for a long time got turned out on the street. The asylum shut down.
Right.
So it really caused a big boom in homelessness, which is terrible. But I don't know, and again, I'm just thinking with a normal brain, I don't know if sentencing to somebody to a lifetime of living in an asylum, assuming they have mental health issues, and giving them drugs and restraints and curfews and basically living like a prisoner, I mean, I'm sure a lot of, baby in the bathwater, I'm sure a lot of legitimately messed up people got turned out as well. But I think a lot of not messed up people got freed.
Yes.
You know? Or at least sent somewhere where they could try something.
Yeah.
Because that's tough. You have to prove that you're not crazy to somebody who is paid for you to be crazy.
What do you think they're going to say?
Yeah.
You know? Hey, it was a bad state of affairs. You were talking about, like, you know, the real bad ones. A lot of times they would use the real bad ones as a form of, you know, control for the rest of the population. They'd have bully zones and everything. They just allow shit to happen, just like prisons, man. And, you know, these people hadn't committed any crimes other than being different.
Mm-hmm.
It was bad, man.
So what's on your list of bad asylums?
I got several. I got a couple of them that I looked at that just had some early exposés on the television that kind of was one of the things that brought stuff to light with what was going on. And one of them is Pennhurst Hospital in New Jersey or Pennsylvania. It's Pennsylvania. 1960s TV reporter ran a 5-episode expose on Pennhurst State School and Hospital. And it painted a picture of neglect and abuse in Chester County Institution, which people weren't aware of. And it was said to have made people watching actually sick to their stomach and everything. Just the scenes that they were seeing. Inmates of the institution were shown rocking, pacing, and twitching. Many were severely disabled, either mentally or physically, but others were quite lucid and coherent. They were just stuck in there, and they couldn't get out, just like we were just talking about. But they were drawn into themselves because of overstimulation of the senses in the loud and sometimes frightening place. They had about 900 more people than they were supposed to have. The 5-minute news segments were entitled Suffer the Little Children, just to make it even more, you know, just heart-wrenching. When one patient was asked by an interviewer what he would like most in the world, if he could have anything he wanted, his withdrawn reply was simply to get out of Pennhurst. It was a nightmare for a lot of these folks, man. State Funded School and Hospital was at the center of the human rights movement that revolutionized this country's approach to healthcare. The facility was one of the most striking examples of the maltreatment that was characteristic of such institutions. Pennhurst opened up in 1908, originally as a hospital for the mentally and physically handicapped, but they were pressured to also accept immigrants, criminals, and orphans. Anybody the state would send them. And they had to get the funding for the, mm-hmm. They had to do it. They didn't have a choice. It was overcrowded only within a few years. In 1913, the Commission of the Care of Feeble-Minded was appointed and boldly stated that those with disabilities were unfit for citizenship and furthermore posed to a menace to the peace. So anyone deemed with disabilities, you could stick them in there if you wanted to.
In the early 1900s, there was quite a bit of a move towards eugenics. It's a very, very dark part of our past that we don't really talk about. You're not going to learn it in school. But a lot of the... I don't know, let's not mince words. What Germany was doing in the 1930s was inspired by American intellectuals. You had a lot of people, and there was actually, you know, it was forced sterilization. The state could come in and force sterilize you.
Well, look at the concept of eugenics. You know, one of the biggest proponents was Margaret Sanger back during that time period. And that's what eugenics was getting rid of undesirables. It was who they deemed undesirable.
Well, and that was the thing, too. And there's a Supreme Court decision that allowed for involuntary sterilization. So if you were a drug addict, a criminal, if you were just undesirable, or you were a Jew, or a gypsy, or whatever, they could go in and just castrate you, or, you know, and... Yeah, you're living in a free society, right? Not unless you don't fit the mold. And a lot of the German model of eugenics was based, and there are speeches. You can look it up. Look up early American eugenics, and they're talking about...
It's disgusting when you listen
like,
to it.
Like, they were of a mind that we had evolved to a point where we currently, by just natural selection, like you choose your wife... And you choose somebody who's going to basically elevate your stature in world. You're going to progress from a child to hopefully, at some point in the future, a successful person. And then you're going to leave successful progeny, and then you're going to continue keeping going up and up.
Right.
And those people who aren't actively doing that don't need to be here. And that was the thought. And that was very... It was a very popular idea, especially in the elites of society and in governments around. And you look at a lot of the 20th century purges, a lot of the massacres worldwide, and you think it's a result of politics. But in a lot of it, it was just enacting philosophy. They're like, oh, well, we have an opportunity now. Under cover of war, we can just get rid of all these guys, and then whenever the smoke clears... They don't know what happened to them.
Right.
They're just not here anymore.
Population control of the ones you don't think are fit.
So, like, whenever the president of Iran says that there's no gay people in Iran, so we don't have to worry about them, chances are he's probably telling the truth.
Or that it's an honest belief that he has. That
If they find them, they just get rid of them.
Yeah.
So, in his mind...
Yeah, as far as he knows, they're all taken care of.
Yeah. And if he finds out about some, then he'll have them taken care of.
Right.
But it's not a problem. We don't have that kind of an issue here. You're like, wow. He's not naive. He's telling the goddamn truth.
But they don't have a problem because he's controlling it.
Right.
Oh, man. Okay, on to Pennhurst. Like many similar facilities at that time, Pennhurst was functioning almost completely independently from the rest of society. Had its own power plant, policed its own grounds, produced its own food, and any additional needs were supplied by a railway line. The facility could operate without any interaction with the surrounding community at all. They were just self-sufficient. And that was the way the community preferred it. They didn't want anybody knowing what was going on in there. Yeah, it's sad, man. This happened right there. You know, they went ahead and jumped Dave Koresh's compound and went nuts for his house. But, you know, there's a facility here housing 2,800 patients. You know, you have no clue what's going on in there, which led to just letting it slide.
Yeah, there's no inspectors or anything.
By the mid-1960s, Pennhurst had been open for 50 years. At that time, it housed 2,791 people, most of them children, which was about 900 more than they were supposed to have. But as a state school, because they were funded, they just had to keep taking whatever they were given. Only 200, this is a sad part, 2,791 people. Of those, only 200 people were involved in any kind of programs as far as art, education, recreation, that would help their recovery, you know, and keep their senses going. The rest of them were just put out and survive on your own. You know, get your medication at this time, get your food at this time, try not
stay
to kill
yourself.
Each other. Yeah. Though, and even though many of the patients were high-functioning enough to improve with the right care, they just didn't care. Administrators interviewed in this program recognized that they were falling short on their ideal treatment, but with the crumbling building, a budget shortfall of $4 million because they had so many people, and only nine doctors for 2,800 people, and 11 teachers, their hands were tied. There was nothing else they could do. Of this documentary, the most chilling scene showed one of the hospital's physicians describing how he dealt with a particularly vicious bully who had brutalized one of his other inmates. He described how he had asked one of his colleagues, this is a doctor that did this, he asked one of his colleagues which injection he could use to cause the most discomfort to a patient without permanently injuring him. And that administrator let him know what it was, and that's what he would do to punish him. From that point on, and you know, when you got a mental patient that already has problems, and the person that is supposed to take care of him is injecting him with stuff to brutalize him, you're not going to improve.
You know, yeah, there's no trust there either.
And you know, the categories they had these people under, because you know, there's different mental disabilities require different kinds of care. You were either sane or insane. There was no in between.
Yeah, no gradients, no shades of gray.
So you know, the treatment was the same for depression, bipolar, schizophrenia. It's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
You're insane. It's fucked up, bro. From that point on, it was inevitable that the hospital would close down eventually. But it took 2 decades. In this expose airing, it took 2 decades to get the hospital closed down. Legal actions, federal judgments made and overturned, and growing financial crisis for the place to finally be shuttered. Finally closed in 1987. Inadequate staffing, decades of abuse and neglect of accusations finally caught up with the operation. His death was not without positive impact, though. The martyrdom of its long-suffering patients helped put into motion changes to medical practice across the country and society as a whole. So. You had to learn about it to know what needed to be fixed. You know, it's sad that it happened, but you had to find out. It's now a haunted attraction.
You can tour it?
Yeah, it's a haunted house now. So folks did pick it up eventually.
Like a haunted house, like a Halloween, like latex haunted house, or?
No, it's a
haunted place that you can visit.
You can visit on Halloween. A haunted house company owns it. So they turned it into a haunted house. Oh, the actual asylum itself. Only one of the buildings, because like I said, it's a huge, huge place. And of course, now there's, of course, you know, paranormal talk of the place, and Travel Channel's been there, and a whole bunch of TV shows trying to find signs of ghosts. And there's a list of just all the different things that they say they've seen as far as supernatural goes. But this was just, I'm sure you know from your research, this is just all too common.
Well, yeah, That's one of the problems with mental health as well as just physical health is it's on a sliding scale of knowledge. Even now, it's weird how in our modern society the comedian Mitch Hedberg, who was like, alcoholism is a disease, but it's the only disease that you can get in trouble for having. He's like, damn it, Mitch, you're an alcoholic. Or damn it, Mitch, you have lupus. He's like, one of those just doesn't sound right, you know. But the idea of mental health and the functioning of the brain and you know just general chemicals. Because I mean, what causes crazy? You know, to not to be insensitive, but what causes it? Is it genetics? Is it your environment?
Diet,
is it diet? Is it you know allergies? I mean, there's so many different factors that maybe you have something that isn't a big deal, but it is exacerbated by, you know, a certain allergy or whatever, you know, you can just snap. They don't understand it now. They certainly didn't understand it then. There's a whole lot of you know, a lot of high functioning people with mental health problems, if you look at it from a purely, I don't want to say rational, but just
common sense.
Dude just has a tendency to blow his top when he gets upset. He's either really happy or he's really, really mad. He's really hardly ever in between. That's technically manic depression, but there's levels of it.
Yeah.
You know, you've
there's
got
levels of anything.
There's levels, you know, you got some people that are just
mildly,
and other people that are, you know. But if you have that licked in with schizophrenia, where people are literally hearing voices in their head, or violent psychopathy, you know, violent psychopaths and sociopaths, their brain just doesn't work right, and they just are missing something.
Right.
And empathy. But then there's a whole lot of studies that think that empathy is something that's beaten out of you. Like, everybody generally has it. Most animals have empathy. You know, it's like, most animals will share their food at least with their own species. Maybe you've got a hierarchy where I eat first, but I'm going to save you some, and right. That kind of thing. Most animals have empathy. We do too, but in some of us,
it gets jaded.
It gets beaten out of us. It's early childhood trauma. Right. It's, you know, substance abuse. It's just whatever. The doctors don't know. They have to do clinical research studies with volunteers and willing participants who can all lie if they want to. How are you feeling today? Yeah. I'm feeling quite sane today, sir. You know, what are you going to do? It takes a long time and a lot of patience and a lot of money. They didn't understand that stuff back then.
And you get to a point, and, you know, I hate to think that, you know, doctors do this to this day, but I'm sure they do. I mean, it goes without saying, but you get to a point in your career where you've done this so many times, a patient walks in and says, I got C, B, and A. You're like, okay, this is what you have.
Yep.
And not realizing that it's actually only the C, B that caused that. That A you need to look at, too. And just do a quick diagnosis. Louis C.K. had a bit where he says, you know, he goes to the doctor and he mentions to the doctor, you know, my mother-in-law, she's been having a lot of headaches. And the doctor says, well, she probably has a bunch of tumors in her head. How the hell do you know that? All I said was she has a headache.
Yeah.
But you're assuming because of her age she has a headache, then she must have a bunch of tumors in her brain. You know, how often does that happen? I was misdiagnosed with my Crohn's disease for 2 years, you know, till I moved to Houston. That's when they finally figured out what was going on. But it's sad to think people are not getting the proper treatment. And, you know, people with these mental problems, I've been to some meetings with my ex a few times just to go with her and stuff. And there's a lot of people that hear voices and have schizophrenia that, you know, work at Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't realize it.
Well, if it's properly cared, it's properly medicated.
And in therapy and everything else, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's a lot. It's a big problem.
Well, and I'm no doctor, but I could tell probably that I would bet money that a lot of depression is caused by diet. There's just so much crap in the food. There's so much crappy food. Anything that's easy to eat is not good for you. And you know, better food costs more money and mm-hmm. takes more effort, and so everybody's always lined up at the fast food trough.
And exercise too makes a big difference.
You know? Well, exercise just does.
Not walking around, you know.
But I believe there's a direct correlation between kind of the rise of the fast food generation and the rise of the depression generation.
Yeah.
And so, luckily, God, I am so glad I had a doctor that was not. He wasn't a pill dispenser, because I am not and have never been someone who is depressed or has ever felt depressed or anything like that. But probably about 15 years ago, I just started noticing that I was going downhill. Like, I was always tired. I was always, like, my eyes were always half-lidded, agitated, you know, just. There was thunderclouds. I was Eeyore. I was just pissed off all the time, and there was something wrong. So I went to the doctor for something unrelated. It was like sinus infection or something. I'm like, hey, I was like, this is what, and he's like, well, you know, it's possibly depression. And I was like, I do not accept that. He says it could be a food allergy too. So okay, He's like, just go through whatever you normally do and just start not, like, change out your diet. Like, could be wheat. So mm-hmm. don't eat wheat-based things for a couple of days and see how you feel. Did that for a few days, was trying different stuff. The day I didn't drink milk, it was like the clouds parted. Well, sun came out, I felt great. I was halfway through the day before I realized, like, dude, I feel better than I have felt in months. Like, so I went back and, well, I'm going to test this theory. I went back and ate some cereal and immediately fell into a funk. And went back to the doctor, was like, this is what happened. He's like, you're allergic to milk, quit drinking it. Like, you're probably allergic to dairy, just cut it out. Cut out milk, that depression went away, and never looked back. And I'm just so glad he didn't put me on some sort of antidepressant that's like, you know, physiology.
Becomes a crutch, and then...
Well, I was still been drinking milk.
Yeah.
And whatever was causing me to feel like crap would not be getting treated. And at the same time, I'm taking something else that's wrecking my brain.
Right.
So I'm glad that I was able to just... Like, I'll stop drinking milk for a couple days and see what happens. But imagine, take these pills.
Oh, when my son was in pre-K, no teacher said something about, you know, he may have some issues. I go to the doctor. All I tell the doctor is, no bullshit, this is exactly how this played out. I tell the doctor, look, this is my son. He goes to this daycare. They're saying that he might have some issues. I don't know. I don't have issues at home. You know, this is what they say he's doing. And she looks at me and goes, yeah, he needs to be on something. And I said, you're not going to ask him any questions? Or she goes, no, I can tell. And I said, bye.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up and walked the fuck out. Because if she's not going to go deeper than that and just go on the word of a lazy ass teacher. And, you know, he was fine after that once he started kindergarten.
And he's like five. Yeah. What are you going to do? Jeez. Well, back to the scary part. Not medicating people for things they don't have. That's not scary at all. But back to the asylums. What's next on your list?
Well, I just wanted to open up with Pennhurst. Just an example of just some of the stuff that was going on. So if you got a few that you notable ones that you definitely wanted to talk about,
we could jump into it. I didn't pull hospitals. I do know that we've talked about the Jefferson Davis Hospital. That's now the Rice mm-hmm. Lofts. That was an insane asylum that closed down in the 90s, as well. You know, in the late 80s. I don't know if there was any abuse going on there. I did date a girl that had a straitjacket from there, so that was kind of
strange. That's kind of cool, man.
She probably needed to be in it, but that's a whole other story. She was cool. We just hung out a couple of times over the course of a couple of weeks, and she told me some stories. But so yeah, that. Anyway, but going back to our good old fashioned, you know, our horror movies. So I mentioned Walking Dead. I mentioned an American Horror Story. You mentioned Rob Zombie's Halloween. Mm-hmm. Halloween 2, the sequel to the original Halloween, happens almost completely in the hospital.
Right.
And it's made all the more scary because Jamie Lee Curtis's character Laurie is under sedation and she can't move and can't walk.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows that he's in there, and she can't do anything about it.
Right. But there's so many movies with scary hospital scenes. They aren't, you know, totally about a hospital, but they just have a scene in there.
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare on Elm Street. They often go into hospitals.
Well, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Dream Warriors, was in an asylum.
Right.
So
there was also Terminator, the parts in Terminator where they were breaking out of the asylum. There was just mm-hmm. the empty halls, somebody just all of a sudden appearing around a corner. It's creepy stuff, man.
And the fact that she was not... If you hooked her up to a machine, she wasn't technically crazy.
Right.
She had some crazy stories, but you could test her blood and find out she wasn't imbalanced. Jacob's Ladder is one.
Yeah.
It's very scary. That happens a lot. A lot of it happens in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And... If you remember, Jacob's Ladder, very Lovecraftian, with the all the different monsters.
Oh yeah,
you know, that's his life blinking out. Mm. And Shutter Island, have you seen that?
I don't remember the name. I don't think I've seen it, but I've seen the movie before. I haven't seen the film.
I read the book. It's really good. It's got a great twist ending. He's investigating abuse at the asylum, and he's not getting much help from the staff. it's a good story.
Okay, we go through. I got a few blurbs about a few of the ones out here that not to go into total detail, but just some ideas of, you know, what was going on in these. Topeka State Hospital in Kansas, which was one notorious one. The story of the Topeka State Hospital's legacy is a story of a patient who'd been strapped down so long that his skin started growing over the straps. Think about that.
Oh, God. Yeah.
They also resorted to abuse, rape, castration as a means to control their patients. Topeka State Hospital remained open until 1997. Danvers State Hospital in Massachusetts. This huge Gothic building was constructed in the 1870s as a home for the mentally ill and insane, aiming to treat its inhabitants with kindness and compassion. Danvers is considered the birthplace of the lobotomy, and soon enough, rumors were spreading about the possible inhumane treatments going on behind closed doors. Some thought the doctors were resorting to various methods, like overdosing patients on insulin and violent shock treatment, just to control the population. Just do away with them. And this was one of those ones that acted as his own grounds. People didn't know what was going on there.
And Danvers is the model for Arkham Asylum as well.
Yeah. Danvers was shuttered completely in 1992, and the remaining buildings have turned into apartments. It may or may not be haunted.
Mm.
Which I would think there's some real bad energy there. Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Kentucky. Waverly Hills is said to be one of the most haunted places in America, and for good reason. It's not an insane asylum, but rather a hospital for TB patients. There wasn't a guaranteed medical treatment for TB when Waverly Hills was built, so doctors occasionally resorted to some other barbaric methods. They removed ribs and muscles, and may have even inserted balloons into the lungs to help them expand more. Many died, their bodies sent down the body chute. It's not known for sure how many people died at Waverly Hills, but numbers range from 150 a year to upwards of 63,000 people. Yeah. Wow. Waverly Hills was pretty rough. And I remember hearing about that one before, some other places too. Overbrook Insane Asylum in New Jersey. As is often the case with insane asylums, the patient-to-staff ratio was unbalanced. Too many patients need care they weren't getting from overworked staff. At Overbrook, conditions were so bad that several patients froze to death in their beds in the 20th century, in early 20th century. Some went missing and were never found. Overbrook eventually closed in the 1970s. And, you know, these places ran for a long time, dude. I mean, decades and decades and decades of this abuse. Willowbrook State School in Staten Island. I've talked about Willowbrook before. The story is shocking, but it bears repeating. In the 1960s, Robert Kennedy toured Willowbrook and was appalled at zoo-like conditions. But it wasn't until reporter Geraldo Rivero investigated Willowbrook and uncovered the truly terrible conditions that the asylum came under fire. Patients were left to wander, often covered in their own urine and feces, and some were sexually assaulted by staff. You can always find Geraldo's clip on YouTube on this particular one. Willowbrook lives on. It was partially the inspiration for American Horror Story Asylum and may have housed the legendary killer Cropsey, who killed children and buried them near the Willow Park property. That is my five, actually. So, yeah.
Well, that puts us at a show, pretty much. I mean, you can keep on going, but...
Oh, yeah. There's, and then the thing about it is, that's here. This stuff's been going on across the pond for a long time.
Oh, for sure, yeah. We'll get into that sometime, but yeah, I mean...
Well, I mean, when we do our torture episode, we're probably going to be bringing some of that kind of stuff up.
Yeah.
Said those have been around for a very, very long time. So, Whittington, housed 3,600 patients at one time. Had its own farms, telephone exchange, post office, reservoirs, gas works, everything. It was a city, essentially. And that was one of the ones in the UK that
crazy
was around
town
for a long time. Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm.
Well, yeah, so there's one for sale right now in Michigan. I'm going to pick it up, Eloise Hospital, which it says is very haunted. There's a lot of stuff. But it's $1.5 million for the property.
That's not much.
That's not much at all. So it has all the equipment there.
Hoping it's touring. Except you have to go to Michigan.
Yeah, you don't want to go December, January, February.
It's kind of cold.
They had a friend of mine moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan from Louisiana. And he called me one day. The first winter, he calls me. He goes, all he said was, my pipes froze. And he goes, I live in an apartment. It's like not very well built. Does it get to your pipes if it's all boarded up? Is that supposed to work that way? But he's like, yeah, my pipes froze.
Damn.
That's cold.
Well, I think that does it for episode 28, The Haunted Hospital. As always, like, share, tweet and Instagram, whatever. I'm always on there doing something.
We're out here, and I was picking some stuff today, actually, putting stuff aside for some giveaways. I think we're going to go ahead and throw some stuff out there, see if we can give you guys a little bait to grab the hook on for us. Right.
In the meantime, we're going to be re-recording an episode that screwed up with the telephone interference, and then we're going to get to that, as promised, torture episode pretty soon. So stay tuned for episode 29 and 30. And we'll be coming at you soon. In the meantime, stay scary.
Cool beans. Later.
Dominique et Nick et Nick s'en allaient tout simplement. Routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Il ne parle que du bon Dieu. À l'époque où Jean sans terre d'Angleterre était le roi, Dominique, notre père, combattit les albigeois. Dominique, Nick et Nick s'en allait tout simplement, routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Certains jours, un hérétique par des ronces le conduit, mais notre père Dominique par sa joie le convertit. Dominique, Nick et Nick s'en allait tout simplement, routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Ni chameau, ni diligence, il parcourt l'Europe à pied, Scandinavie ou Provence, dans la sainte pauvreté. Dominique, Nick et Nick s'en allait tout simplement, routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Enflamma de toute école, fils et garçons pleins d'ardeur, et pour semer la parole, inventa les frères prêcheurs. Dominique, Nick et Nick s'en allait tout simplement, routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Chez Dominique et ses frères, le pain s'en vint à manquer, et deux anges se présentèrent portant de grands pains dorés. Dominique, Nick et Nick s'en allait tout simplement, routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Dominique vit en rêve les prêcheurs du monde entier, sous le manteau de la Vierge en grand nombre rassemblés. Dominique, Nick et Nick s'en allait tout simplement, routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Dominique, mon bon père, garde-nous simples et gais, pour annoncer à nos frères la vie et la vérité. Dominique, Nick et Nick s'en allait tout simplement, routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu.